You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, April 25th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building, the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. Cliff Schechter will be joining us to recap, I guess, the week that was. Also on the program today, from Veep, an HBO show, old friend of mine, Matt Walsh, will be giving me a movie selection for the weekend. Also on the program today, Northwestern University football players, today's the day they vote whether or not to unionize. We won't know the outcome for probably a couple of months. Apparently, CNN does a docu-mini-series on Rahm Emanuel, and it is just like a docu-mini-series without the docu part. Or at the very least, they were very inclined to give Rahm Emanuel good coverage. Net neutrality, fallout continues. Decision to be made by the FCC in the coming weeks. And Cliven Bundy? All that. Yes.
Cliven.
Oh my God, this guy. Cliff and I will talk about it today, but I think we will, well, of course, we'll also talk about how
you'll ask some
crazy
questions. You'll raise some questions.
I'm wondering some things about him.
You're still wondering.
I'm still wondering. We will talk about that and more in just a moment. And what else? Bart, we're going to take a quick break. What's that? Yes, I said net neutrality. I think I have food poisoning. And
what do you think you got it from?
Some bad food.
Okay, let's take a break.
Yeah, I had a burger at a diner because I'm solo with Myla this week, and so we're playing fast and loose with what we should be eating, and I just can't help but think about that burger, frankly. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Steeter on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday. And as we like to do here on Casual Friday, we'd like to invite Cliff Schechter onto the program and before we do that, we like to play the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm a little bit under the weather, but I am surviving. I'm still standing.
Isn't there a song about that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's.
Sing it for us?
No, I can't. But I'm doing as well as Clive and Bundy.
It depends what you mean by well. Mentally, I think you're doing far better. Clearly, by taking a look at him, you're doing far better when it comes to your intakes of, let's say, trans fats and others. I think you've got a better wardrobe than he does, certainly. But if you throw a cowboy hat on, it seems to me, no matter what, you could just walk around New York City and just take all sorts of shit for free. So you are missing out on that.
Oh, definitely. I am definitely missing on that. Now, before, I want to sort of walk through this. I mean, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit here when it comes to Clive and Bundy.
Or IQ.
We should start with some of that low-hanging fruit. But then I want to expand on the relevance of this guy. But first, now, he is still on his tour trying to explain to people that he's not racist, that he genuinely believes in what he says and does not seem to be aware of what he's saying. Let's just listen to this clip.
Well, as part of his tour, he should be an opening act for Ted Nugent. It might be perfect.
Well, I don't know if this guy's really as much of an a-hole as Ted Nugent, to be honest with you. I mean, I think this guy is just incredibly ignorant, but also he more so than Nugent really does sort of illustrate just what is wrong with the libertarian strain of the conservative movement. But yes. Before we get there, let's just, because I'm just curious, I've listened to this clip multiple times, and for the life of me, I can't figure out what he's saying, but it's so crazy we should play it. This is clip number one, where Clive and Bundy explains to Chris Cuomo that on CNN that he is, in fact, not a racist.
Wonder if Negroes weren't better off as slaves. Now, are you a racist?
No, I'm not a racist, but I did wonder that. But let me tell you something. You know, I thought about this morning quite a bit.
Please.
And I thought about what Reverend Martin Luther King said, and that they thought about Rosa Park and taking her her seat at the front of the bus. Now, Reverend Martin Luther King did not want her to take her seat in the front of the bus. That wasn't what he's talking about. He did not say, go to the front of the bus and that's where your seat was. What Reverend King wanted was that she could sit anywhere in the bus and that nobody would say anything about it. And you and I could sit by her anywhere in the bus. That's what he wanted. And that's what I want. I want her to be able to sit anywhere in the bus, and I want to be able to sit by her anywhere in that bus. And that's what he wanted. He didn't want this prejudiced thing like the media tried to put on me yesterday. And I'm not going to put up with that because that's not what he wanted, and that's not what I want. I want to sit by her anywhere in the bus, and I want anybody to be able to do the same thing. That's what he was after, is not a prejudice thing, but make us equal.
Mr. Bundy, nobody.
You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I you know what? I kind of do. I'm not sure that I understand it. I understand that Martin Luther King's message was one of peace and freedom, and that when you suggest that you were wondering if blacks were better off as slaves, the opposite of freedom, and very offensive to people, and I think you probably know that.
Well, let me tell you, I took this boot off, so I went to put it in my foot in my mouth. with the boot on. But let me see if I can say something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I sinned, and maybe I need to ask forgiveness, and maybe I don't know what I actually said. But you know, when you talk about prejudice, we're talking about not being able to exercise what we think and our feelings. But we don't have freedom to say what we want. If I say Negro or black boy or slave, I'm not, if those people cannot take those kind of words and not be offensive, then Martin Luther King hasn't got his job done yet. I should be able to say those things, and they shouldn't offend anybody. I didn't mean to offend them.
All right, now let's work backwards on this one, Cliff, here, okay?
Can I ask a quick question, though?
Yeah.
Do you know when Fox is playing their new special, the Clive Bundy and Paula Deen Grand Jamboree?
Well, I mean, this guy has, I mean, you know, it's hard to sort of separate the sort of shocking racism and the ignorance to that racism from the, from what we're talking about here. But we really need to also focus on the fact that this guy has the entire, like, MO and operating system of the conservative mind, right? The idea that I don't have my right. If people get offended because I say black boy or slave or Negro or whatever it is, I don't have my rights because they get offended.
Right. The victimization, it's, you know, again, we're going to get to that piece that I wrote on what happened in Georgia. But the point that I made in the end of that piece, you know, is that all of these are all, you know, everything that we've been seeing the last couple of weeks has fit nicely into this, because it's all part of that mindset, the sort of everybody needs a gun in Georgia, which really means every white person. Clive Bundy's reaction to the government and shockingly how he feels about African Americans. And I'm sure if we were to get him started on immigrants and Jews and gays and others, we would hear, and women, we'd hear similar opinions along what we would expect. The neo-Nazi in Missouri and then magically, or in Kansas City and magically, of course, the mayor from Marionville who happened to just agree with him. He shouldn't have gone and tried to shoot Jews,
right,
which he couldn't even manage to do, by the way. But you know, I understand why he felt that way. This is all of the conservative mindset. It is a strain in all people. We have it in America, anti-intellectualism, resentment, but you know, it exists in all countries, and it is, you know, or at least a lot of Western European and other countries. It is hugely dangerous, and this is the thing that Roger Ailes understood when he created Fox News, and they've understood on right-wing radio, is this is how you turn people who were at one point, or at least whose ancestors at one point, were New Deal Democrats into right-wing Republicans, is you play the resentment card. You tell them the government gives black people things, to just break it down to its most simple, and there's other things too, immigrants or whatever, but that's really what it comes down to. The government gives black people things who don't work and are a danger to you and your white women, if I were going to put it into a sentence. And that ties the mentality of all of these people together, all of them.
And then it's almost a work, they sort of reverse engineer from there. You know, this guy thinks that Martin Luther King, his job was to get rid of discrimination, but he has failed in his job if people will not respect my First Amendment right. And he obviously doesn't understand the concept of the First Amendment, right?
Right.
But no one
told him he couldn't say that. He just said he's a racist for saying it.
He's saying that Martin Luther King failed because there are still people, those people, who are offended by my saying this. And what he was
saying. Then he said a lot of stuff about the bus, too. I almost thought he was going to break out and singing Magic Bus at some point. But
the bus stuff also is sort of fascinating, because he's sitting there arguing like, they shouldn't be forced to sit in any one part of the bus. They should have the right to sit wherever they want, as if, I mean, obviously this guy does not spend a lot of time.
Are you discriminating against the bus, Sam? All parts of the bus are equal. The middle of the bus, the front, the ceiling.
I think his argument in his mind is black people should have the right to be slaves.
Yeah,
and
that's what they truly want.
The government's interfering with that by giving them, this free ride.
Well, you don't have to read that much into it even to get there, because part of his statement before this one that got him in trouble was that black people have become less free.
Yes.
Now, because they're all on the government dole, sitting around on porches. Geez, I wonder what term he was thinking of in his mind. Not doing anything, you know, and just accepting government, government checks, but whereas they used to have these nice family units that worked as slaves. So weren't they more free then?
Right.
I mean, this is what this asshole said.
Now, this is, at this point too, this is what, and you know, I was on Hayes last night trying to make this point, was that there is so little daylight between Paul Ryan's sort of, formulation of this. I mean, strip out for a moment the obvious, you know, sort of the obvious racist stuff, the obvious stuff, the most explicit.
Right.
Strip that out. How is this different from Paul Ryan's notion of the, you know, we don't want the safety net becoming a hammock, right?
Yep.
Poor people are poor because they're lazy. They are lazy because the government has made them be lazy by, you know, giving them the opportunity to do so.
By letting them have land that they can graze on without paying. Oh, wait, sorry.
I want to get to that point, too. I want to get to
that
hypocrisy.
So that's totally different.
This is the same formulation, right? I mean, this is, and Paul Ryan just says the inner city, and this guy, as Dana Loesch said, didn't have the media training to say the inner city. He just said
black people.
That is
exactly right, Sam. Yes, this guy is like, you can consider him a Republican talking points decoder ring. Because
yes.
What he does is he adds in the things that Paul Ryan and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and many others, when they go after food stamps, when they go after welfare, when they go after unemployment insurance and talk about dependency and the hammock and people not wanting to actually get jobs and just sit around, and sometimes they'll even screw up and say something like, oh, I just want to sit around at their barbecues eating fried chicken. Oops, you know. But in the end, this is the subtext of what they're saying and what they have reinforced over 30 years with a constant stream of propaganda worthy of, like, you know, the CIA in Nicaragua. I mean, that's what you're talking about here, that by getting rid of the fairness doctrine, by allowing hate radio to go on, by allowing Fox to buy, you know, getting the Telecommunications Act where we deregulate these guys so they could buy up multiple outlets in the same market. So even if you're in a place as progressive as New York, you've got the same message coming from the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal and Fox News on TV and all these radio stations you turn on. This is what these guys have accomplished. It doesn't come from nowhere.
Right.
You know, they have played to the worst strains of paranoia and conspiracy and hate, and they've mixed it into this toxic brew, and it's one of the big reasons we are where we are today.
I wish somebody would make an argument, and this, you know, your point there we'll touch on too when we get to net neutrality, what's happening with net neutrality in a bit, but. You know, I would love to hear where this guy got his notion of what slavery was about, too. I mean, I haven't dug through Rush Limbaugh's kids book yet, but I mean, this, you know, I mean, honestly.
You will be reading that to Saul at night, though, I assume.
And no, highly unlikely. But let's play another clip of Bundy. Let's move to that sort of also the other aspect of this sort of conservative, and particularly the libertarian strain, which of course is that they are something like 94%, I think, of self-identified libertarians are white. It may actually be higher than that, but that's the stat that I've seen. And when you think about libertarianism, it is completely a set of principles to adopted to essentially both allow them to ignore their own privilege that they get and maintain a status quo of a system which necessarily, you know, sort of relegates others to a substandard position. So,
yeah.
And you know, good for Bill Weir on CNN. He asked Clive and Bundy the obvious question about basically us taxpayers having to subsidize his profits in form of his beef. Number two.
Yeah.
here's where the irony really gets thick, is that you are writing off a whole class of people, African Americans, as sort of dangerously dependent because they get government assistance. At the same time, you're grazing your cows on public land for free. So how are you not sort of a welfare queen in a cowboy hat?
Well, you know, I might be a welfare queen, but I'll tell you, I'm producing something for America and using a resource that nobody else can use, would use or could use, and I'm putting red meat on your table, and, you know, maybe I'm not doing enough, but I'm trying.
Hey, I love a burger. I love a good filet, but there are 16,000 other ranchers in Nevada who pay grazing fees. Aren't you mooching off of them?
Well, I'll tell you, there's 16,000 people not very happy, and there's 16,000 people have signed contracts with the United States government. They should be thinking about sovereignty of the state of Nevada and signing contracts with their county government, not the United States. I can tell them that much.
But this land has been federal since we got it from Mexico in 1848. The grazing laws have been on the books since 1934. I know your family's been there a long time, but you own a little bit, and we own the rest. And what? It doesn't seem reasonable.
You better start respecting my rights a little bit, and let's start respecting state sovereignty a little bit. And then you show me in the Constitution where the United States could possibly own this land that I graze my cattle on. Just take 5 minutes and show me.
Now, I mean, this guy, you know, he had it right at the beginning, and he just kept digging himself the wrong hole. He is a welfare queen. And frankly, apparently, not only is he a welfare queen because he's getting this for free, he's not. In fact, excuse me, I think it's actually being too kind to the guy to call him a welfare queen. He's a thief. He's stealing from us. The welfare queens are the other people who are actually paying the Bureau of Labor of Land Management fees for federal lands, because they pay $1.35 per animal month unit, I guess. So I guess one animal grazing a month on the federal land versus an $8 to $23 fee on private land. So the welfare queens are the ones who are actually paying the BLM. They're the ones who are getting subsidized. This guy is just an out-and-out thief, but he doesn't particularly like the law. You know, I mean, where's it say in the Constitution that anybody can give me a speeding ticket?
Right. Well, when you're fat, white, and rural, that's okay, because you have the right to just ignore the laws. It doesn't make you a welfare queen or a criminal or anything. That's for all those other people of different colors who live in more urban areas, have, you know, listen to hip hop and stuff like that. I mean, that's all it comes down to. It's just a simple mentality of somebody who by the fact of the color of his skin has been privileged and has gotten away with all sorts of things. The same kind of guy that is Jon Stewart, to much hilarity, made clear in his show that Sean Hannity, if he were African American or if he was an occupier, would be saying he should be in prison getting tortured, probably getting waterboarded, but now he's a hero, so you want to try to gin up as much as much violence as possible, get as many people to show up there with guns, so that hopefully we can have another Waco, another child molester hoarding guns, or another Ruby Ridge, another neo-Nazi shooting at police officers, or maybe we can have ourselves another Timothy McVeigh and blow up 168 innocent people because this guy feels somehow the government has trampled on his rights to steal stuff from us. I mean, it's the same exact mentality, and we can go on as the, you know, whatever. We could go on the entire show about these various right-wing domestic violence and right-wing anti-government movements. They, no pun intended, bleed into each other. And that's why what Rand Paul says and others like him is it's so dangerous. There's libertarianism. There's an actual sort of upper middle class suburban kind of libertarianism. It does exist where people aren't particularly racist necessarily, but they like their lives and they like the government just to stay out of it. I call it naive and unworkable. But a lot of what goes for libertarian, I would say the vast majority of it today, is the Rand Paul strain of libertarianism.
The neo-Confederates.
It's not libertarianism by any definition of it. It's neo-Confederate,
beliefs, essentially, is a belief that the federal government should stay out of things so in our state we can make laws and rules as our state would like, which is banning homosexuality, having sodomy laws come back, and forcing women, you know, out of the workplace and controlling their bodies and making certain groups of people occupy lower places on the economic ladder than other people, and so that we can run things like we used to out of our sheriff's departments and through our local governments. And that's what it's about. That's why Ronald Reagan in 1980 went and kicked off his campaign, you know, with Trent Lott in Philadelphia, Mississippi,
right,
where the three civil rights workers had been murdered. That's the kind of libertarianism we're talking about here.
And let's just say, you know, I want to just, because I want to talk about this gun law that has been passed in Georgia. But, you know, Dave Weigel had a very interesting piece. He does a lot of reporting on the conservative movement. And, you know, he made the point that the reason why Bundy was so celebrated on the right was because they have been trying for ages in their think tanks, in their ALEC meetings and whatnot, to campaign against the notion of federal land. Because, of course, you know, conservatives hate the idea of the commons and that there would be any.
And really, government
ownership.
Owning anything. I mean,
right.
They hate public schools, they hate national parks, they, you know, everything should not belong to the government.
And apparently, the problem they have with this is that even in the Western states, even where that sort of strain of libertarianism you would anticipate was the most prominent, is it's just not popular. Apparently in Colorado College State of the Rockies survey, by a 2-to-1 margin, people in Colorado did not think that having too much public land was a problem. And so they saw Bundy as some type of, like, I guess a mascot for this, and that, sadly for them, and happily for the rest of us, he is no longer. You know, he's also a mascot in some respects. I mean, you know, let's talk about what's happened in Georgia. They have signed what is by far, it seems to me, the most extreme gun law in the country. You wrote about this in the Daily Beast, right?
Yeah, they have. I mean, it's incredible. And you know, other states, of course, on the heels of this are going to want to follow along. I wrote an article on this about a month ago, and we talked about in the show that, you know, that this had passed the legislature, and it was what Nathan Deal was going to do. And of course, you know, Nathan Deal is only worried about a primary from the right, so he's the governor of Georgia, so he signed this thing, which is just basically it's the guns everywhere bill. You're not talking about places of worship, you're talking about
bars,
sporting events, bars, schools,
libraries.
Because, you know, we haven't learned anything from Newtown, and we haven't learned anything from the 3 school shootings a month we've had in the 17 months since then.
It not only allows guns in those areas, it basically decriminalizes. It basically says there's no punishment if you bring it into anywhere else. So airports.
That's right. You know what it is? If you bring it into one of these places where they tell you you're not allowed to. So if a church pastor says, has the right to say, you can't bring it in here. The huge punishment for having done that, if you don't listen to this, is a $100 fine. I mean, they basically made sure that there's it's like a speeding ticket to bring a gun into a place where someone has also told you that you can't. And then, of course, the piece that we talked about last time, that one of the biggest parts of all that people are missing is, it is illegal for felons to have guns in this country. One of the few good laws after that, you know, we passed after the 1968 the assassinations, and then we got the Brady Bill in 1994, so there'd be background checks. Of course, there was the gun show loophole, which people who are quote unquote private sellers, who just, you know, sell an antique gun out of their attic here or there, or, you know, 150 to 200 assault weapons a year, which we found to be the case, don't need to do any kind of a background check on people. So what they've done, of course, because the criminal market is very profitable for the NRA and all the arms dealers they front for, is they've made sure that criminals have all the access to guns they want. So now we're going a step further. You shouldn't have it, but you're going to be able to get it because we've made it possible. And now you have the right to assert, stand your ground, If you decide, if you're a felon in illegal possession of a gun, but somebody looks at you the wrong way and you're scared, you know, they might pull a gun on you, you shoot them, you have the right to assert stand your ground. And it's absurd. It is absurd. Frankly, I don't know why other countries, particularly Western European and others, wouldn't literally do a travel warning like you do right. about going to Saudi Arabia and, or somewhere and just say, I really think they should do that. Just be like, this is what you're in for if you go to Georgia and any other state that passes that.
You know, it may be just a matter of time. I mean, this is not going to, I don't think it's going to end, frankly, but it's not going to progress well, I should say. And, you know, I mean, it's fascinating because this, a lot of people have brought up the point, obviously, that if Cliven Bundy was a black guy and was, never mind stealing property and had a bunch of friends show up in pickup trucks with more guns, that this would lead to anything other than sort of a massive response by the federal government. I mean, that's quite
obvious. It would
probably
be the new Black Panthers that Hannity keeps saying exist, right?
That's the point. You know, there's a reason why there's gun control in California, and it's because Ronald Reagan was afraid of the Black Panthers showing up to city hall meetings in San Francisco with shotguns. I mean, that is why there is gun control in California. And why Ronald Reagan passed it is because he was afraid that black people were saying, like, hey, we're going to walk around here with our Second Amendment right with shotguns. And
right. And to be clear, you know, that's why, in the opposite sense, what's going on in Georgia is going on right now. It is directly related to the mentality of Cliven Bundy and the Rand Paul wing of the Republican Party, or really most of the Republican Party, no matter what wing. It's directly related, and you'll see it because all you have to do is go and look at the rhetoric being used by some of the legislators, which I probably should have written down and brought to the show here. But you know, you can easily Google and find people talking about threats, the threat to my wife and whatever of certain people breaking into my house. And I mean, it's clear what it's about. It's the same thing it's always about. The gun culture is directly connected to the racism and the feeling that you need to be superior to others, because that's what guns in this country were always about. Initially, it was about holding your slaves in place. And that is essentially where we are. And that's why it's not a shock that some of the states that passed this stuff first, but after 2010, including the state I'm sitting in right now, a lot of states that don't have that history have also been saddled with crazy legislatures and crazy governors. And so in places like, you know, Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania, you could potentially see some of these other legislatures trying to copy this, and you can bet I'll be showing up to the state house if anybody in the state even thinks about passing this idiocy
in Ohio.
And then I'll encourage people to never come visit my state.
Well, you'll be there,
or I may no longer be here, or I may find my way back to New York City.
Well, that would be an upshot. I mean, don't give people any reason to lobby for something like that. All right, well, Cliff, we just have a couple of minutes because I know you got to run. The FCC has come out with a new plan for what they call net neutrality, and apparently no one else does.
Does the FCC even really exist anymore?
Do
they do anything? Do they regulate anything?
This is really stunning because you have Tom Wheeler and you know, people were talking the day that he got appointed that this could well have been the end of this. But Tom Wheeler was a former CEO of, I don't know if, what telecom it was, but he was the head of the telecommunications lobbyist lobbying firm.
Yes.
We have covered this on this program quite a bit. There was an attempt back during the Bush administration. The FCC changed the classification of internet providers from common carriers to a non-basic utility, basically a different classification,
right.
I think it was two. And they have attempted to impose net neutrality on this industry
via the Section 706. I mean, there's no point in getting too wordy about this, but they can't do it. Every time they do it, they just don't have the authority under Section 706. They keep losing court cases. They keep going back to the drawing board when all they need to do is reclassify them as common carriers, and they can do this. The idea, Cliff, that the internet is any less important to telecommunications than the phone was 15 years ago is ludicrous.
Of course. I mean, it's semantics. And again, I'd love to see, we know this guy obviously was a big telecom lobbyist. I'd love to see who he's, or, you know, it's not even, you don't even say who he's potentially being paid more by right now. I shouldn't even imply that, because these guys always, this is a revolving door at this point. All of these regulatory agencies are in a way that they never were in the past. It's the same thing at the SEC. You know what I mean? So you sort of expect that all these guys were out in private industry. They're never going to go after their friends. They're only going to make it, the situation more lucrative, because you have every expectation that that's where they're headed within a couple of years, right back out where they were.
Now, President Obama,
none of this happens by accident.
In 2007, all right, this is not one of those things where I projected my own sense of who President Obama was. In 2007, he explicitly came out for net neutrality. I mean, very
yes.
Explicitly. And so this is just, I mean, this is just, it's unbelievable. And good for Nancy Pelosi, because she basically came out against this proposal. I mean, for what it's worth.
Right.
And, you know, she represents obviously a lot of players and the internet coming
that's
from San
true.
Francisco. I think this is going to be a big fight. People need to really contact the FCC. This is a huge issue.
No, I know. We're going to have to direct, I mean,
we'll
really
have stuff at majority.fm where you can sign petitions through Daily Kos, and we'll have emails for the FCC people. And then this is the open comment section now. So now's the time to do this.
Now's the time to get in there. They're in the open comment section. You're exactly right. Because a lot of times these are the things that regulatory agencies can do, but people forget, hugely impact our lives every day, and it happens under the radar quite often. And this is another one. I mean, do you want the internet to look the way it looks now? Do you want to, who's your provider, and how much are you going to be charged to go to this site or this section? I mean, are we going to allow the big telecom guys and the big providers now to essentially to find even more ways to profit and kill the internet as you know it today? And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, you know, your browser will move slower when you go to certain sites. If you're not using the right guys, you will not be allowed to go to other places without paying. I mean, and frankly, I'm sure there's many avenues they can open up for profit beyond what we've even thought of. They've probably got it mapped out somewhere.
Well, that's the big part about this. I mean, we don't know what the future is. I mean, listen, I know you got to go. Are you all right for time? Do you need to split?
Let's talk for another minute, and then I'll jump.
I mean, look, we don't know what's going to happen with this technology in the future. And regardless, I mean, the plan is now for the FCC is to create a baseline and then an opt-in thing if somebody wants to pay more. I mean, look, that's just not only do we not know what the baseline is, but the baseline should be where we will be in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years.
Exactly.
Like, why would we put basically an anchor down for the level of quality service that we have on the internet when we are already behind the vast majority of the Western world?
I can't think of a reason except for...
I didn't leave
reason.
You much
when
there
we,
to work
well,
with.
Well, it's just simple. It's whenever we're doing something that is hurts, does not benefit the vast majority of people, but some small group of people benefit immensely from it, there's your answer. Who are the people? Follow the money, the old saying.
Indeed. Well, Cliff Schechter, you follow the money, and I don't know what that means either. But
show me the money, baby, and I'll follow it.
Locate the money. I will show you the money, then you follow it.
Okay.
Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, man. Always my pleasure.
All right, folks. We got a couple of minutes here before we're going to get to Matt Walsh. But this, you know, I guess what I'll tell you why I'm getting so agitated by this. And I think Michael knew that what he was doing with this. But he pulled a piece by Brendan Sasso. I don't know who Brendan Sasso is. From the National Journal. The FCC caved on net neutrality, but it didn't really have a choice. And it's, you know, I don't know how long this piece is. I mean, I print it out. That's the way I do things. I print it out. So I don't really, I can't tell you. But I can tell you that when you print it out, it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages long. And just to give you a sense of the percentage breakdowns of how this piece goes, for the first 1, 2, 3 3/4 pages, it explains to us why the FCC can't do anything about it. And then on the last 3/4 of a page, not even there, at the bottom of that, even the, you have an advocate saying, the FCC took their best shot, but it turns out we were right. You can't get to where you want to go under Section 706. That is the authority that the FCC uses now to classify the internet providers as something distinct from a common carrier. And this guy Sasso writes, but reclassification has much bigger implications than just net neutrality. The FCC would be applying a massive regulatory regime currently used for phone companies on broadband providers. You know what? That massive regulatory regime works. It's already there. How can anyone make the argument? In fact, not only how can anybody make the argument that the internet isn't as important today as telephones were 20 years ago, how can anyone make the argument that they aren't more important, that it isn't more important to participation in the economy, to education, to basic communication? I mean, it's impossible to argue that. And then he goes on, it's debatable whether it's a politically viable option. Yeah, if it's debatable, then there is an option. Congressional Republicans and business groups would launch an all-out war, warning the FCC could kill the internet economy. That's just absurd. Then his other argument is reclassification could derail other items on the Wheeler's agenda, on Wheeler's agenda, such as an auction of airwave licenses. He doesn't explain how this would happen. A network technology transition also doesn't explain how that would happen. Or why there would be a network a technology transition for anybody but who is willing to pay the highest amount. And the president's proposal to improve internet access in schools. What? Consumer groups argue that protecting an open internet is worth the fight. This guy should be taken out. What? Who is Brendan Sasso? Is this an op-ed written by someone from the National Association to Not Have Net Neutrality? Is there one of those?
Sure.
No, he's a technology reporter for the National Journal.
What a moron. All right, we're going to put up some links on
there is a link on our site for a White House petition to classify internet providers as common carriers.
Okay. And also, we should link to the comments page for the FCC. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Matt Walsh, who will give me a movie selection. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome Matt Walsh, one of the stars of one of the top political shows that people are talking about. Of course, we all know it. It's House of Cards. And Matt plays the Secret Service guy who made out with Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright in that one really creepy scene. Matt.
Did you read my bio? I'm not on House of Cards.
What's that?
Did you read my bio?
Oh, my God. What? Did I read your bio? Well.
Yeah, I'm not on House of Cards. I did not make out with Kevin Spacey.
Oh, geez. I'm just getting on Wikipedia right now. Veep! Veep! There's two political shows. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Way to go. My son's in the car. Way to go.
Oh. Hi!
Hi! So, Matt, you got... So you have kids now.
Way to go, Sam. Way to start the day.
I'm sorry. Is that who's that? Emmett? Jude?
No, this is Jude.
Okay, I'm just now, I'm on Wikipedia now. I didn't even, you know, I didn't realize you have three kids now, dude.
Yeah, thank you, Wikipedia, for updating my children.
And
hi, again.
Yeah, Jude, you got to tell your dad to get a different picture of him on Wikipedia, too.
Yeah, Jude just pointed out there's still a Veep poster here in L.A.
There's still a Veep poster?
Yeah, at the nail salon, there's a tiny poster in their window. I guess they're fans of the show.
Wow.
Not House of Cards.
No, all right. Well, I mean, you know, your son should know that I was just kidding. Of course I know you were on Veep, because last night I had the opportunity to meet the star of that program, Tim Simon.
Julia Dreyfus. She's great.
No, it was Tim Simon.
Tim Simon?
I was on Chris Hayes' program, and I see him walking down the hallway in NBC, and I'm like, I know that guy. And of course I didn't. I just recognized him from the show and then in the green room, and he was, is your son, can your son hear this?
Say that again, Sam? I'm sorry.
Can your son hear this?
No, we're now at the kids' indoor playground.
Okay, good. What? You're in L.A. What are you taking him to an indoor playground for?
Because they have a zip line and they have things we don't have.
Wow. I don't know why you're denying your kid the opportunity to have a zip line. Why don't you put one up in the backyard?
Because I don't know how to rig that. I'm not handy like you. Yeah. I would probably kill someone if I hooked it up.
What just happened to your son? So you're taking your kid to an indoor playground in L.A.
In the valley.
Wow. Well, Tim Simons was very nice. Didn't have great things to say about you.
He is a nice guy. He's a very nice guy.
You guys are hosting something together this weekend in New York.
We are hosting the American Comedy Awards.
Yeah, you sound excited.
Are you nominated?
I did not get my nomination form in time.
No one nominated you?
Well,
usually people get nominated by others.
Well, that's one way of doing it. You can do it other ways, apparently. You could do a self-nomination, but I missed the deadline. So wait, how old's your oldest kid?
Jude is going to be 7 in May.
Holy cow.
And then Emmett's going to be 5 in May, and then Celia's going to be 3 in December.
Wow, I guess it's been a while. I got two kids now.
How old are your kids?
8 and 1.
Oh, 8? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's a third grader.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you're really on top of it out there. So tell us, I mean, how is it? Is it fun? The show looks fun to do.
Hold on a second, Sam. Hold on.
What is he doing? There he's taking go. His kids.
The gate. I have to let him in the gate. All right,
this is like taking your kid to the dog walk or something. You're just going to open up the gate and let him run.
Yeah, exactly. And he plays nicely with the other animals. All right. What were you asking me?
How's the show fun? Where do you shoot it?
Oh, come on.
You shoot it out there or what?
You have me on the air to ask me if my show's fun. Do people ever say no to that question?
Well, that's what I want you to tell me the truth.
Yeah, it's a blast.
Doesn't sound like
it. Do a lot of rehearsing. It is.
Now, come on.
It is. It's absolutely a blast.
It's virtually just you and I in this conversation. I mean, so you know, it's so you're having a moderately good time, but the money keeps you there, right?
That HBO money, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, is it where do you shoot it? Do you shoot it out in L.A. or do you shoot it?
No,
shoot it in Baltimore.
We shoot in Baltimore, Charm City.
Why?
And we spent about. Didn't you ask Tim these same questions?
No. No, I was saving it all for you, buddy. Why do you shoot it in Baltimore? Just so that you can
shoot in Baltimore. Hold on.
Are you good?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I just had to make sure I'm paid up. Okay. We spend 10 months or 5 months for 10 episodes. And we start in September usually and wrap in January. And they get a nice tax credit from Maryland.
Okay.
So there's incentive there. And then we have a lot of second unit stuff we shoot. You're a director. You know what second unit is.
I know exactly what that means. That means you have a second unit that goes out and shoots stuff.
Yeah, interstitial pieces, usually not much dialogue in them.
Just let's get Matt crossing the street near the Capitol.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so, yeah, it's good. And everything we shoot has the same mid-Atlantic vibe of D.C., so you can go. There's a lot of, like, old estates in outside of Baltimore that you can shoot for various, you know, landmarks and things.
Well, that sounds like fun. I mean, is it a pain to be away from your family?
Or is it is, but it's
it's really good.
You know,
though,
we're gypsies, so
it's
we have
really
to go.
Good.
We're like, when the fish are running, you got to get on the boat. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I know. I mean, is your family there? Can you not really say how great it is?
No, it is. Truthfully, the first 2 weeks is amazing because it's like you're a bachelor and you can do whatever you want, and then you get homesick. And
right.
Then it's like we go home every 3 weeks.
I mean, I remember what you used to do as a bachelor, and I could see how that could get really boring very fast.
Yes. You're up to no good if you're left to your own devices. We play a lot of squash. That's been fun.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we all stay in the same, like, Marriott Residence Inn or whatever it's called.
And there's a squash court in the Marriott?
There's a gym in the basement of the hotel, and there's also a movie theater, so we see a lot of movies, too.
Wow, it sounds like camp.
Yeah, that keeps the insanity. It keeps you busy, so you have something to do.
And so what do you do for the rest of the year? You're still obviously doing stuff at the UCB Theater, right?
Yeah, when I'm in town, I'll do like one show a week, either a Saturday or Sunday, or ASCAT show. I'll do that. And then just hustling, you know, trying to get something in between seasons.
Wow, it sounds like you don't sound terribly excited about this, buddy.
I was just thinking of your listeners, if they're bored yet.
I mean, let's hear some juicy stuff.
What do you got? You ask me some juicy questions.
What's Ian Roberts up to?
Ian Roberts?
Yeah.
Ian Roberts won a Peabody for Key & Peele. He's the head writer on Key & Peele.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's,
I didn't even know there was a Peabody.
You don't know about the Peabody Award? I think it's for, I don't know what it's for, actually.
The presentation of the Peabodys?
No, but we get to go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner this weekend.
Wow.
That's fun.
Now, so are you like, when you go down to like D.C., are you, I mean, this is sort of, this is one thing that I sort of, like, you're now going to get like prime tickets to the Republican and Democratic conventions, right? You go to the correspondents' dinner, you get.
Yeah, we could. I mean, I haven't been to any of the conventions yet, but like we're getting invited to like the swanky brunch that everybody tries to go to. We're going to the Vanity Fair party. So
what's the
event?
Like, this is at the correspondents' dinner?
Yeah, the weekend. There's all these. We get in Friday, and then there's like a Vanity Fair and various cocktail parties you go to. And then Saturday morning, there's a big muckety-muck brunch that we all got invited to.
So do politicians come up to you? I mean, have you done this circuit yet? I mean, do they come up to you?
No, this would be the first time. It's funny. It's basically our show is like an industrial for what happens in D.C., so everybody in D.C. Is a fan of it. So I've been to D.C. once since the show's aired, and we got swamped.
Really?
People really. Yeah, well, it's made for that town, obviously. It's exactly what they do for a living, so they're very interested in it.
And you've never been terribly, I mean, have you, are you terribly interested in politics before you did this? No. You're not even interested in
that? I would say I'm more up on politics than you are, yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
I think I'm more insightful to the political process, if that's what you're asking, yeah.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm asking. No, that I have no doubt about. My point is, just personally, you're not a terribly political person, are you?
No, I don't think you would call me a political person, no. I guess I'm, what am I? I don't know.
Just one of those NIMBY guys?
No, I get involved about things I care about, but I'm more of a fan of history, I gotta say.
Really?
Is there like a boring meter yet? Can you monitor where?
No, don't worry about it. Believe me, I'll talk for hours on sort of very granular Medicaid policy. This is slightly more interesting than that.
Then I always feel like the way the media runs is when stories break for the first 3 to 5 weeks, there's a lot of misinformation and people get invested in something that is spoken as truth on the first day, and then 2 weeks later it's changing. So I like the detached nature of history where you have perspective and then you can understand the real process and you can understand the real causes of things. So I think I protect myself from getting too invested by like daily news.
Well, la-dee-da. And so what?
No, I don't. I'm also lazy, so I'm probably not. I'm not aggressive enough with keeping up with things. But I stay on top of it a little bit, and I guess I'm a progressive. I'm definitely more progressive than conservative.
And so, where do the politics from the show come in? I mean, do you sit down with? Does Frank Rich? Do you sit down with Frank Rich, or is that mostly they write it in the script?
It's a pretty collaborative process. Armando, who created the show, Armando Iannucci, is brilliant, and he's a Brit, and all the writers are British.
I know. Isn't that sort of ridiculous, though?
It's amazing, actually. It is. I think they have a healthy perspective because of where they live.
Right. First, it's the Canadians, then it's the Brits.
So their take, Armando's take, quite frankly, is what the show is, and then Frank weighs in on the execution of what the reality is. If somebody's trying to get a bill, where would they meet or who would they go to next or what's sort of the chain of command inside the party. So Frank's like a consultant on all that stuff. And he reads every script and he'll weigh in. And then we do rehearsals. And once we get into the rehearsal process, all the cast gets to contribute to like making it funnier or, your character arc, you can contribute and say, I don't know if I'd do that. Can I try this? And
so there's a lot of improv in there. Yeah, I mean, I think.
Yeah, in the rehearsal room. Yeah, we rehearse a lot improv a lot in the rehearsals, and then the writers just sit in the room and crib notes or quotes, and then they make another draft, and some of the stuff you've done in improv is reflected in the next draft. And there's probably 9 or 10 drafts of every script, and then on the day, and you stop learning your lines by the second episode because everything comes in so late, so you just walk in and they give you sides.
What a cush job.
It's actually a great job, but it is. When we're there, we're always working. We're either rehearsing or filming or doing stuff.
And you shoot a lot, right? I mean, they shoot it quick. Is it all like handheld type of stuff? And
they shoot like 60-page episodes for a 30-minute product. So they overshoot.
They do a lot of editing.
And then there's a bit of improv. There's like 5 or 10% of improv on the day when we film. But so there's a lot of extra material. And then Armando pretty much edits every episode, so he's really good at cutting to it. And I think the documentary style allows for that sort of jumpy storytelling.
And so basically for you, all the heavy lifting was just growing the mustache.
That's what got me on the map. The mustache has its own IMDb page.
It is. That was a brilliant move on your part.
You got to do something. I'm losing my hair, so I got to do something.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, what do you mean by losing your hair?
I've lost my hair.
I mean, I'm looking at a picture of you that is clearly, like, you know, on Wikipedia, that is clearly old. I mean, that's from like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, come on.
So what are you saying? I'm not sure what you're saying.
I'm just saying, you know, I get the reason why you had to have a mustache.
Yeah, you get it.
I totally get that.
I'm a character guy, so you gotta.
But this is gonna push you into. I mean, I think you're like a season and a half away from being, you know, a near leading man.
I don't think I'm a leading man. I disagree with you. I think I could be a second banana or.
Yeah, near leading man. Oh, dude, I gotta tell you. I mean, I've watched Veep. I enjoy the show. I don't watch it as religiously. As I feel, every time I watch it, I sort of binge watch it, but I don't get that much time to sit down and watch TV. But the episode you did in Benjamin's show.
Oh, which, yeah.
which was where I mean, I'm trying to describe. I don't know if I can describe this. Matt was in one of John Benjamin Has a Van show, which was very short lived, and did very poorly ratings wise.
Yeah,
and was
typical
also
Benjamin project,
right? Was critically panned. There was one episode where Matt was basically the star, and it was how John and you were on a crew together, a documentary crew or a news crew, and he just joking around pushed you over the border. I think it was into Mexico and had stolen your passport. And then you get basically thrust, in like a multi-year sort of, I guess, you get kicked out of country after country. It was very funny. I'm not.
Yeah. He pushed me over the border into Mexico, then into like Colombia and then into some other, and I became a drug kingpin and my life was ruined. And
that was the best episode of that show.
I love that show, actually. I'm a fan, but it was short-lived.
It was very short-lived. And it was, you know, it was a complete mess. I mean, let's be honest. You can say that.
Like everything John Benjamin touches.
It's absolutely true, right? He's got, like, the opposite of the Midas touch. There's no doubt in my mind this show would be doing much better if he hadn't done the intro for it. But I'm contractually obligated to use it, so...
Yeah.
So what else? So what's next? So you coming to New York to do the Comedy Awards, and then what?
I'm going to be on Seth Meyers' show and then doing the Today Show and Fox and Friends.
So this is the highlight of your media tour. Wait, you're going to be on
it's
what?
The heart of my media tour. Yeah, it's the heart of my media tour.
Wait. You're going to be on what? The last thing?
Fox and Friends. It's the morning show for Fox.
Have you ever seen that show?
No.
Oh, my God, dude. Are you serious?
Why is it? What is it? Is it a train wreck?
Oh, they are morons. Did you?
They're what?
They're morons.
Oh.
You should at least look at the parodies that SNL does of them.
I probably have seen that then. Yeah, I've probably seen that.
Have you not? What have you been doing?
What do you mean?
You've never heard of Fox and Friends?
I've never watched. I barely watched the Today Show. I don't watch morning TV.
Well, do you ever see Jon Stewart's show? He does this.
I see Jon Stewart's show.
Yeah, he plays clips of them all the time.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
All right, I'll have to go online and watch some of it.
You know how Matt Walsh goes through life, right? Did you even know that you were auditioning for a Veep?
It seems relaxing.
Or were you just all of a sudden got a call and you're like, you got the show, and you're like, what show? And then you're just in Baltimore.
So you've never walked into a press event and not been familiar with the show?
I mean, no, I don't know that I would. No. I mean, it's not like it's a new show. It's been around for like 12 years.
Well, I could probably guess it's like morning silly banter, isn't it? Isn't
yeah.
that all it is?
Yeah. So, yeah, they probably won't get very political with you.
I don't think so.
Now,
I won't bite them. I won't bite on that.
Will there? You won't. You won't go on there. I mean, is there any chance I can encourage you to do something controversial on that program?
Should I give a shout out to your?
You should.
Majority.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do that.
You should do that.
Seriously, do that.
You should. You should preface something that you say like, you know, I was on Sam Cedar's Majority Report, and I said this. I mean, it's not terribly controversial, but it would be funny for me.
Should I make fun of the? Should I make fun of the people who believe in global warming?
Yes, you should go. As I was saying to Sam Cedar on the Majority Report, we all know global warming is fake. You should say
yeah.
something like that, actually, just to see if they go. Well, of course, because they probably will.
Oh dear.
Oh come on.
All right.
Where's the Matt Walsh I knew who would do something like that?
So I should take him to task on their beliefs?
No, like, I mean, you shouldn't take him to task. That would not be the you should do the opposite. You should actually espouse what they believe and do it in a very ham-fisted way.
That would be funny. All right, we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll see.
Oh, come on. Yep. I know. I'm going to call my public relations publicist and find out. I think I met your publicist. Is it the same? You got the same publicist as Tim?
No.
Oh.
My publicist is Anthony. I don't think you know him.
No, I don't know.
Like
so
him.
You're going around this media tour. And do you
yes.
feel like you're competing with Tim? Because you're doing...
Tim's on fire. Tim's like...
You're doing Fox
Tim
and Friends. He's doing Letterman.
Yeah, Tim did Letterman. He's like, and he's younger. He's like, he's on fire.
Yeah, what's this whole thing about his story about how it wasn't going well and he just took a flyer? What was the guy's like, what, 28 now? Come on, right?
He's 35.
Whatever. Even still, though, right? You and I both know that's... There's no risk there.
Yeah, he hasn't paid his dues. Like, that kid is, he's got grab the golden ring there.
Yeah, absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Yet he's the one who's doing Letterman, and you're like on what, Carson Daly?
Yeah, I'm on Fox and Friends, and he's sitting next to a American legend, and I'm on Fox and Friends.
There's only one way that you're gonna get yourself out of this basement, and I'm telling you, it's to say, as I said on the Majority Report with Sam Cedar, everybody knows that global warming is a joke. Come on.
I've got to couch it in a way that's going to take them a little longer to figure out what just happened.
No, they won't. More. Believe me. It would take a long time for them to figure out. It would take a long time. All right, well, listen. You know, Matt. Now
maybe
that
they staged.
Huh?
Maybe I'll claim they've staged all those videos of the ice shelf falling into the sea, like the moon landing. I'll claim that those were shot by Spielberg and Katzenberg.
Oh, you should say that. That's the rumor in Hollywood, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, maybe I'll go like moon landing approach. All this nonsense they're showing is proof.
You've got to do it. You got to do it.
I will think about it. Oh, I can't promise you.
Unbelievable. He hasn't changed at all. Now, Matt, you get to take a vacation from your family for 5 months out of the year. I don't. So you have an opportunity to watch all the movies you want. I don't. I barely have time
right.
to even, I'm not even allowed to go out to see a movie in the theater. I haven't done that in, I don't know when. The last one, actually, I do know which one it was that last Bond movie, and it was really, I thought, a waste of my time.
Yeah.
So I have people like yourself come on and give me a streaming movie recommendation.
I'll give you a couple, and they were movies I would never have gone to see. Well, because like you, when I'm at home, I never get to the theater. But in Baltimore, I'll go downstairs and see a movie, whatever's playing. So I saw, by chance, Ender's Game.
Ender's Game.
Ender's Game. It's basically, they're trying to be like Hunger Games a little bit. But it's a book series for young adults, and it's a really good movie. So I would go to bat for that. And then The Counselor, which was
Ender's Game, was written apparently like 30 years before Hunger Games.
Yeah, Ender's Game has been around, and it's a good story. It's about a kid who gets recruited by the military to save the planet, and he thinks that, you know, the aliens are bad guys, and then he sort of learns sort of a pacifist message at the end.
Jesus, really is the enemy. It really is all about the mustache view, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ender's Game. It's, Ender Wiggin is recruited by the international military to lead the fight against the Formics, a genocidal alien race, which nearly a lot, okay. All right.
Lots of
Harrison Ford is Harrison Ford. You get exactly what you expect from Harrison
Really?
Ford.
Harrison Ford's still kicking around doing these things. All right.
Yes, he's the heavy. And then The Counselor is a great script. It's a kind of a dark story, bleak, but
The Counselor?
Javier Bardem has one of the funniest monologues I've seen in a movie in a long time.
Really?
Yeah, he's great in it. And Brad Pitt's in there, he's great. Great cast.
So are you having to do a lot of this, like, where you kiss up to, like, lead actors like that to try and get that, like, that number two part? I mean, I'm looking at
Rotten Tomatoes
gave it 34%.
Right? Brad Pitt probably listens to your show religiously.
Yeah, but both those movies got really bad reviews.
I know, that's why I'm saying they're, you wouldn't think to watch them, but I think they were good.
You're recommending bad. So you're saying, like, I got two movies that are not as bad as everybody says.
Exactly.
But they're still sort of bad.
They actually might be good.
They might be good.
Yeah. I mean, you could go with, I don't know.
Do they give you a suite at that Marriott, or is it just one room?
We have a kitchenette, so I have a microwave, a sink.
And do you have a suite? Like, do you have, like, a separate, is your bedroom in one room, and then there's, like, a...
No, there's no divider. It's all out there.
Really?
The bathroom has a door. Everything else is out in the open.
That makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. And the laundry is only on 3, 5, and 7.
Now, they don't do your laundry for you?
No, you got to go down. Don't go to 7 or 3 because the dryers are terrible and it'll cost you like $5 to get your stuff dry.
All right. Well, that makes me feel a little better. If you had a suite and they're doing your laundry, I would get a little bit annoyed.
That's a little life hack for anybody who's going to stay at the Marriott in Baltimore.
So what's the next movie you're in?
I'm going to be in a tornado movie coming out August 6th called Into the Storm.
Mm.
And I play a storm chaser.
Really? Was that fun?
Yeah.
Who's in it?
It was awesome. Who's in it? A guy named Richard Armitage, who was the King of the Dwarves and all the recent Hobbit movies. Sarah Wayne Callie, who was on Walking Dead, and then a bunch of young teen heartthrobs like Nathan Kress, who was on iCarly.
I don't know.
And Jeremy Sumpter, who was Peter Pan in the 2009
no idea.
Movie.
And where do you live out there?
We live in Toluca Lake.
I don't know what that means.
It's right next door to Studio City.
Okay.
Right by Burbank.
And God forbid you have the kids play around the lake, right? You got to bring them into the factory.
No, we can't. We don't have access to the lake. The lake's pretty small and it's pretty built up, so you can't get near the lake. So, you know.
All right. So tell us something. What's going to happen? What's the big reveal on Veep this year?
What's the big reveal? Well, we're 3 episodes in. She's campaigning.
Right.
To be president.
Does she win?
Does she win? I don't think we get to the election in this season.
Oh. So we got some breaking news. I don't know if people knew that, but Veep will not get to the election at the this year.
I don't think. Don't quote me, but I don't think we do. I don't remember.
Well, I'm going to quote you. You're on radio. you've already, it's not like I have to quote you. I just play the audio.
Is this a trap?
Yeah, this is, I'm not fooling around here. Hold on. Now, wait a second. Michael, who is the, my producer, wants to make a, or one of my producers, I should say, wants to make a prediction about what?
About Veep.
Okay.
I predict that, regardless of, basically, she's going to end up being Veep again for another guy that she detests. That's my prediction of where the show's going.
Now
she's going to somehow get.
Now, what gives you the clue
to
that? The name of the show is Veep, because you couldn't really go.
Yes,
like,
Sam. That's exactly
be...
it.
All
so
right,
insightful.
Michael, you've had your piece. That's...
I disagree with you. I think it could be where next season she's president, and then you just follow the new Veep.
Ah.
Well, that would be like what happened in the British show that Armando did, because it was about a new minister taking over the same department. So good,
there you
good
go.
Point.
All right. So point. Matt Walsh says Julia Louis-Dreyfus looking to leave
right.
Veep. I'm just training you, buddy, for what's going to happen when you get on Fox and Friends.
Because the British people don't care. They recontextualize their season. They can jump.
I know. For them, it's just a walk in the park. We just get a limited series.
Yeah,
that's
you
it.
Do three seasons usually.
Yeah.
Two.
God, so we can actually do a real arc. We don't have to worry about maintaining some type of comedic engine throughout the series.
I'd still maintain outside shot that the defense secretary guy becomes president and she remains Veep.
All right. That's
you
Michael
think Maddox. That's Isaiah Whitlock. You think he's going to win?
It's a yes or no question.
Well, actually, there's a little bit more of a context for that. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think he'll win. Sure, I'll put that down. Sure.
I would say if anyone's going to win, it would be who would win? Who are the candidates? I forget. Danny Chung.
You don't even pay attention to the show. Let's be honest. Come on. You just punch the clock and then go down.
Oh, I forgot about that guy. Chung.
It's unbelievable what you're doing, just based on that mustache. Well, Matt, are you there still?
It could go, or it could go Game of Thrones, where you just kill the lead.
Ah, I love it.
Breaking news music again.
There we go. Matt
Walsh. Julia Dreyfus assassinated.
Julia Dreyfus character assassinated in Veep.
Yeah.
Let's see if Fox and Friends gets that out of you. I doubt it. All right, buddy. Well, thanks for coming on. Good luck. The show is really great. You were very funny in it. People were very excited to hear that you were coming on. Probably less so now, but I mean, in general, people very much enjoy it. I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to hear from your son.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Other kids.
He's on spring break, so we have to have a lot of activities every day.
Is he coming to New York?
What's that?
Are you bringing the kids to New York or no?
No, it's too hectic.
Right, you hate your family. Okay, Matt Walsh, everybody. Thanks so much, buddy. I will probably not check out The Counselor, but I may check out End Games.
Ender's Game. Let me know what you think.
Okay, I will. All right, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Bye, you guys. Thanks, Sam.
Bye. All right, folks.
I got to catch up on Veep. That's what
it's very funny. It's a very funny show.
Oh, I saw like the first like two episodes. I just got a free HBO. Verizon Fios has gifted me with a free month of HBO randomly, so I got to catch up.
Breaking news
music promotion.
Again, please. Matt Binder, free month of HBO Go. I love you. Went to the. Really, the least interesting part of what you could have said, and already a pretty questionably interesting comment to begin with. No, but it's gotten better and better. You definitely should watch it. I would say, like, the first season is funny, but it's just steadily built and built to the point where now
it's really good. It's set in current day, right? It's not a period piece.
That's right. People don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. It's for YouTube.
Okay. All right. We got a Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
It's called Clive and Bundy.
Clive and Bundy, Def Leppard's the beat. He's up on a soapbox putting down the Negro pleas. Clive and Bundy won't even pay his grazing fees. He's covering our land with a cattle poo. Looking at the feds saying, what you gonna do? Waving guns, acting like they are legit. But Clive and Bundy's just a hypocrite. My suggestion to Clive is to grow some weed. But Clive won't listen to me or Harry Reid. He's covering our land with his cattle crap. Acting like he's gonna blow up and bust a cap. Waving guns, acting like they are legit. Clive and Bundy, just a typical right-wing son of a bitch, hypocrite.
Oh, man, there that weed line, Jimmy, that was great.
Masterful.
And we should also note that, once again, this song was co-written with Def Leppard. He's another one of our listeners.
Okay, great. Wow, I love it. All right, let's get to the IMs. I have to pick up Mile again today, so.
Another freebie.
Freebie Friday. Right. Militant Apathy. Sam, that was pretty funny when you looked at that guy from the New York Post last night on All In. Your expression was like, dude, what the fuck? He was very squirmy. You know, Robert I've known for years, and he is, you know, definitely sort of right-leaning. And he, at one point when I was talking about sort of the parallels between Paul Ryan and Clive and Bundy, he was like, he laughed or snickered. And so I found it annoying because, let's be honest, he knows. It's just, that's not what his job is. Parallax Sunrays. I love Matt and Mike. They're way better than that loser you had in 2011, though Matt looks like a rodent. Does he like cheese? Who was in 2011? Dorsey? That Emerald Sacrifice guy yesterday was a jerk. I'd sleep with Michael any day of the week. He's sexy. Says Real Waldo. Who's Emerald Sacrifice? Oh, but I don't know what is going on. Things are getting too...
I don't know, but it's making a lot of sense so far.
Ben Beish. Right-wing Gandhi? That, of course...
I think it was Libertarian Gandhi.
No, they...
Wait, did somebody actually...
Oh, yeah. Kevin Williams in the National Review Online early on this Clive and Bundy thing said the guy was like Gandhi. Compared him to Gandhi.
I'm simply asking, I wonder these things. The Negro picked cotton and was fulfilled in his family and himself, and I wonder if this is better than the government handout system. These are just thoughts, and if you cannot have these thoughts, then the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. has failed.
Michael, can we really quickly get an impression of Clive and Bundy's manifestation of Martin Luther King?
I just need to preface by saying this might be the most tasteless thing I will ever do in my public life, but it was just like, what was it? I have a profound and abiding dream that old white men who cheat on their taxes and illegally use public land can refer to me as Negro, boy, and publicly ponder the benefits of slavery. If he's not able to do this, then we have marched for nothing.
Jeez. We may have to cut that out of the... Monorail, forget the internet. The right would argue that water shouldn't be a regulated utility. Cliff Schechter. Less time with Schechter, more on Michael's bald spot. Also, I wish I was Jewish. The only Passover I see is being passed over promotion. Or passed over by cute girls. I don't know. And then Michael's bald spot. Yes, more of me. By the way, I'm cold. Michael, please put on a hat. My butt poops. I agree about Matt. I've had poops that look better.
What?
Oh, God.
Is this one person iming back to?
I would imagine. The International Herald. How about them Trailblazers? Nets looking good, though. Oh, dear. Ender's Game is a terrible adaptation of the book. The big reveal in the book is merely an afterthought in the movie. In the Kant's Council, the moral of the story is everyone in the world is beyond evil, so you might as well just shoot yourself now.
Well, the book was also written by a very homophobic man.
Great Jimmy Reefer Cake song, by the way.
I thought that was amazing. I mean, he literally recommended two movies that
they're
have
horrible.
Gotten just like The Counselor. Everybody has said that that was like just aggressively awful. And the only thing that's interesting about it was that it was written and directed and acted by very talented people who produced maybe one of the worst movies ever made. And Ender's Game, the reviews were like, even if you're into that sort of thing, it's terrible.
In terms of content, 12534, can someone tell me the difference between what Bundy said at the press conference and what Paul Ryan said in regard to inner city culture? No. I mean, that's my point. I mean, in terms of the thrust of it, no. Slappy Shack, barring violence, what could the effect of mainstream media narrative drastically enough to make the D.C. take money in politics seriously? We're not going to revolt, and the Dems may lose this fall, so Obama's going to be even further hamstrung if it comes to pass. Yay for two more years of concentrated culture war BS. If money in politics is the problem, how do we, the people, fix the problem? I mean, it very well may take a constitutional amendment of some sort. Or, you know, there's a lot of people also think that it will be very helpful, at least in the long run, to have publicly financed campaigns. And we can do that on a state-by-state basis. Amy B., my son came into my room frantic because he's headed to Georgia with his high school group. He's afraid, and his friends, yes, group of teenagers walking around, will get shot because some paranoid freak will shoot them. This is what kids worry about now. Unbelievable. A Square, Sam, Bundy passed milk cart expiration date. So predictable. But important to note, Happy Dancing Slaves meme is not new. The spinnings of the Roberts reign of terror and his dismantling of civil rights as part of a fulfillment of MLK dream is just immoral. Oh, my God. MSNBC contributor, congrats. We're even more proud to be a Cedarista. Oh, yes. Yes, I should tell you folks that, I mean, I was surprised they said that last night because it's not really quite formalized, but I'm going to be a contributor. So basically I'll be doing the same thing, but I'll get paid a couple hundred bucks to do it, which is good. But I was surprised at hearing the title. I mean, so it's good. I'm a race baiter. I just pre-ordered the Pixies' new album on vinyl using the link at majoritireportkickback.com. All right. Let's go to the phones. YouTube notified me that Sam added my account to his inner circle. What does that mean? I have no idea. Trajan Horse. Does the H in H. John Benjamin stand for Hugo? Sadly, no. Kevman, how did you and Cliff read so much into that Clive and Bundy interview? I didn't know what the hell a guy was saying, but we can really expect anything else from the nuttiest anti-government Mormon since Warren Jeffs? Vampire Squid, great question of Matt Walsh about how much his mustache gave Kevin Spacey a tickle during their love scene. You certainly aren't afraid to ask the tough questions. Thank you. Adam Baum, today's show links at majority.geekwonk.com. Including in a link to the appearance on All In. Got to remember to put something on the front page. Geek Wonk. Front page. I get food poisoning. I feel like I'm going to pass out. Bingo Mosquito. Movie recommendation for those who like Veep. In the Loop. Same people hiding the camera and the same actors. Also the BBC series The Thick of It. Basically the same characters doing other things. Yeah, I mean, how does Matt not recommend that? Unbelievable. So a Nightlight interview, says DX Fool, with Lupita Nyong'o last night and thought Clive and Bundy, Peg Bundy, and their 14 kids should have a private screening of 12 Years a Moocher. Oh, and forgot Scandal, that political show that doesn't require a monthly TV subscription fee. Chem Champion, can't express how big of a fan I am of the Upright Citizens Brigade. Don't know everyone who listens to the Majority Report watch that show. So you should post a video of the Ass Penny sketch with Matt Walsh and Ian Roberts on the website. Yeah, it was really interesting, actually, back in the day when they came in. I think I was in New York for about a year. I think they showed up in New York probably in 94. Five-ish, and they started. The four of them bought a theater, or rented out a theater, and they launched UCB. It was sort of amazing. Zen Stick, Joe Rogan, worth a comment or just another white guy doing a poorly informed show full of brain drool and unexamined privilege? Eminem talked about him briefly last week, and I listened to a couple of pieces of some shows before writing off as a bunch of vacuous self-congratulatory. I can't say it.
Keep going.
Brain drool. I don't know any. I haven't listened to any Rogan, so I don't really know. Triangle Bill. The counselor is stupid. Waste of time. He's correct. Great cast. The flick is a waste of time. When you were talking to Cliff Ree, Bundy, racist screed, the meme is old. It's just that it only bubbles to the surface every now and then. Recall a few years back, there was a clip that went viral with a college student who stood up and espoused essentially the exact same claims re slavery. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've had somebody on this program, one of those libertarians, call in and say something like that. The Counselor is an original script by McCarthy, directed by Ridley Scott. You will hate this movie. All right, I'm not going to watch it. Dolink, Do Hayes, last night you were listed on the contributor. Hope that means you'll be getting a check, not just more fame. Never saw it before. Usually says Majority Report. Yeah, I am. I'm going to start getting a little bit. It's not huge, but it's something. Can you explain what the upshot in the Times is, Michael?
The what?
The upshot. It's this new feature they have, which is supposed to be sort of like.
Oh.
Sort of.
No, I can't. No, I think I know what you're talking about.
Data-driven. I don't know.
I think, frankly, the Times should keep it simple.
Nathan Flowers, whatever happened to Evan? You're beautiful on the inside. Matt, Orson Scott Card was a terrible writer, besides being a religious homophobe. Evan is off engineering things. I ran into him. I got an update about him recently, and I can't remember what it was. Born Blue. Maddow did a great segment last night outlining the history that connects white supremacy and the anti-government movement. Clower, I'm not a huge fan of Ender's Game, the book. The movie was not all that bad, maybe because I expected an absolute disaster. S. Wright, 68. Congrats on MSNBC conservatorship. It's about time. Give yourself a shofar. Thank you. XRX. Didn't catch the show from the beginning, but I caught a little bit when Cliff said something about Georgia. Is that regarding a corporation of municipalities like Sandy Springs in 05? No. Send me a link about that. Moshi Moshi. I was also fairly successful in my biz, but my fellow illustrators and friends' careers went stellar. Yes. My Dixie wrecked. Congrats on the contributorship. Daily Show and Colbert have been crushing Bundy this week. Pretty hilarious. Does Matt Walsh still do his football podcast? I don't know. Nathan Ray, I can't recommend another Armando creation highly enough. Alan Partridge is 20 years of TV. Yes. Klug. Monorail. Sagita. Wipe that pine tar off your neck. Nancy in Dallas. That's the Red Sox game the other night. So happy to have your true progressive voice as a contributor. Thanks, Sammy. Thank you, Nancy. M. Rex, are you going to interview Piketty? I'd like to. I got to get through the book, though, first. Rypop Phil, shame we didn't get a group photo of the Washington gang and Clive. I don't know what that means. Jeremo, yeah, Sammy back. And the final I am of the week, Craven Moorhood. Does anybody see the wrinkly liver spotted Bundys as the core of the GOP? Bundy epitomizes the whole party. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. to you while I shifted in and out.